Good morning. Good morning.
Oh, man, we're all here. Excellent. All the experts have assembled.
Why are you laughing? I don't know at if experts. What well, about... no. All the experts have assembled. We have the two.
All right. What about hexperts? Do we have any hexperts? Are
shut,
you a witch?
Shut up.
Hello, hello, and welcome. I'm Nick.
I'm Ryan.
And joining us today are our two special guests.
Roy.
And Sarah.
And this is Liku Studios Podcast, talking about Monster Hunter Gunner's Guides with Roy and Sarah.
So, our two guests here today are Roy and Sarah of WeLoveCulty.com, an online retailer offering prints and totes and etc., and recently released a Monster Hunter guide, a follow-up to their original beginner's guide, the Gunner's Guide.
Correct. So, like, our first guide was to try to help those people that wanted to play Monster Hunter but were intimidated by the learning curve.
Mm.
And now that we've kind of... Hopefully, I'd like to think anyway, we helped get some people into the game. So our second set of guides are geared towards more experienced players who want to tackle like what I consider to be the two most complex weapons in the Monster Hunter universe.
Mm.
How was, just from how you guys experienced it on your end, how were the beginner's guides received? Because, I was sort of, through My Fair Hunter, I was aware of you guys sort of just before you put them out. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of the other places I was listening to, everyone sort of mentioned it. And to me, at least, it sounded like your beginner's guides became the sort of de facto, if you're getting into Monster Hunter, you get these.
Yeah, well, you know, we came out with it before the release of Tri-Ultimate.
We didn't even know Tri-Ultimate was coming out.
Yeah,
like
that's true.
We were just going to make the guide no matter what.
Yep.
And then, so we released it last October, and then it sort of picked up momentum in the spring of this year, like, coinciding with, like, I don't even know how they found our guide, like, these bigger news sources. Like, we're still kind of mystified.
I sent some out to a couple journalists who, they were reviewing the game, and they were talking on Twitter about how they were a little confused about things, so I was like, oh, well... Mm. Let me hook you up. And then a few of them, I think, mentioned it to other reviewers, and then
so
they wrote about it.
Mouth.
Yeah, it was pretty much word of mouth.
Yeah, I think I heard you guys plugged on the Giant Bomb podcast for one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. That really blew up after that, because I think a lot of people were like first hearing about Monster Hunter that had seen that. I think it was the Quick Look, maybe. And then, yeah, crazy sales, and I think we gave Patrick over at Giant Bomb like a coupon code, so that helped. And
yeah, because like with Ultimate coming out, which Ultimate is still kind of like, even with Wonderful 101, like up until that point, Ultimate was basically the game for the Wii U. Like there was kind of no other real reason to own one, but with the Wii U coming out, the new Monster Hunter being like the thing that everyone who owned a Wii U was owning it for, and then you put the guides out, it just sort of really messed up really nicely, and it felt like it hit just like a big wave.
Yeah, it was a very happy coincidence.
It was.
And I'm kind of glad that it was out there, because, like, well, at least for me, when I was a beginner, like, if I were to just... People keep saying, like, oh, you can just, like, Google game facts, but for me, that would be so overwhelming. Mm. Like, I wouldn't even know what to Google. I don't know any of the terminology. I just wanted something that, like, would kind of hold your hand through the process.
Yeah,
Monster Hunter, it has that sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, reputation as being, you know, just an impenetrable game with skills and armor lists and weapon trees and everything. So just having a resource that kind of quantifies, like, look, this is what's here, rather than just being sort of set adrift and saying, well, I hope you learned something.
Yeah.
is really useful.
Very specifically, like, some of the problems with Monster Hunter, like, there's a lot of things where it's, you know, just sort of like another sort of a character action game, where, you know, you get a weapon, there's bad guys, you hit them, and there's a lot to it, but it's a lot of the subtleties of Monster Hunter that you kind of, like, are never explained, but also are sort of, like, hard to... Like it's never explicitly explained, but then it's also the kind of stuff that really makes no sense. In the Beginner's Guide, you mentioned a couple of times the way that skills activate.
Mm.
Like, it'll say that you have plus one to a skill that actually means nothing. That's just that's a weird way to wrap a weird thing to have to wrap your mind around. Which it's just you can't really just come in and get that. But it's a very simple piece of information.
Yep. Yeah, we actually part of the way that we got our head into the mind of, like, beginners was we asked all of the listeners, the My Fair Hunter listeners, to contribute, like, tips that they wish they could have given themselves when they first started the game.
Mm.
So that was, like, a really helpful, like, pool of like, these tips that we ended up incorporating into the guide through, like, little, I think we called them, like, community tips or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of reinforced the stuff that I may have dryly talked about in the guide. And, yeah, I think it really added a lot and was very helpful.
That is sort of the cool thing about Monster Hunter is that, you know, while it isn't a huge, like, commercial success, it does have kind of a very devoted fan base. So you have people like yourselves now who are kind of like the village elders passing on their...
Oh, I like
their
that.
Hard-earned... Yeah.
Well, it was sort of the, you know, way before Dark Souls, it was kind of the game that if you were going to learn how to play, you kind of needed a mentor.
Mm, yes, exactly. And I feel like that's a mentor-student relationship. It's much easier to happen in Japan, like, since there's so many other people with, you know, portable devices and public transit and meeting up places, but not so much in America, unless you happen to know someone.
Or live in a city.
Or live in a city. So the guide was kind of like... Buy your own mentor.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and it's sometimes I almost wonder if, like, there's the idea that, you know, in the States we didn't get Monster Hunter until very late in the franchise. So, you know, some people say, like, oh, well, it's designed that the people playing this know from earlier in the franchise. Mm. But sometimes I wonder if sort of that mentor and, like, you know, led by your friends mentality is actually sort of a design choice for the game. We had a podcast not too long ago where we were talking about teamwork with George Albor of experiencepoints.net, and we were basically talking, and Monster Hunter is a game it came down to, we were talking a lot of games like Left 4 Dead and League of Legends and Dota and stuff like that, where they sort of divide all of the, you know, everyone has, like, a one specific role that they can fill, but Monster Hunter goes, you know, everyone has the ability to hunt a monster. You can play this game solo with any weapon and still do fine, but it's, you know, it is when everyone comes together, when, you know, there are big monsters you can only get when playing with other people, and, you know, the way buffs
online
work,
exclusives and whatnot,
and, like, you know, you can pick whatever skills you want, but then when everybody has all the skills and they can stay synergize with each other, like, that is where Monster Hunter hits its peak.
Definitely.
I agree.
So,
and kind of on the note of, you know, games that more kind of discreetly separate, like you were saying, in, you know, a MOBA-style game where everyone has their own set of core skills, like, the only thing that differentiates players in Monster Hunter is their weapon choice, and beyond that, you know, everyone has access to the same tools of flash bombs and traps and dung bombs and everything. It's kind of cool that, you know, you can take something that, you know, you can see someone doing something, and you say, oh, I wish I could do that, and then you can just get that tool and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the way a lot of people develop strategies in Monster Hunter 2, outside of, you know, guides. They'll see other people do it, and they'll kind of... Like, I like to... Whenever I see a really good player, I check out their armor setup, what skills they have active, and then give you some ideas of sets that I want to make.
I also like that it's just, like, an even playing field. Like, no one has more, like, EXP than the other.
Yeah.
There's no levels.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just pure talent.
True.
I actually remember a while back you had a post on when you were just starting to mess around with gunning on the Devilfish gun build, or the Angry Tadpole. I forget which it was called. And it was just this sort of thing that had, like, it wasn't anything, you know, in Tri, you build the guns out of three parts, and you have all the different ammos and casings and everything. And so it was just this sort of thing that arose from players testing out builds and trying to find something that was just, like, generally useful. And it's like, here you go, Angry Tadpole. This is what we've come up with.
Yeah, I remember. We talked about this a little bit, but when I first decided that I wanted to get into gunning, I was, like, combing all these forum posts and online guides and stuff, and it took like a long time to really grasp how the weapon worked, especially in Tri, because it was so much more complicated with the bowgun crafting system. But I mean, it was a fun journey, you know, gathering all that information, but it also was very time consuming.
Which is kind of I think that's kind of the ethos of, or reflective of, the nature of Monster Hunter. You know, when you do all of your preparation and planning, you gather your materials, you gain knowledge about the monster, and then you take it down.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It really encourages patience on the part of the player. That's why usually the worst people you'll ever see in Monster Hunter are the least patient people.
Yeah. Nick is making a face like, I don't even know what.
Listen, just because I like to rush, I think it's a viable strategy. Listen, when you have a hammer, you can be a tornado.
Yeah.
Okay?
Exactly. All
right.
But, like, gunning specifically, I think it's sort of, like, even with, you know, if you just have a great sword or a long sword or whatever, you can just hack away until you take the monster down.
Yep.
But, like, with a gun, you go in with a specific loadout of, like, okay, this is how much ammo I have. I need to use it wisely.
Yep. And also, gunners all have, like, way less defense than blade masters, so you're much more vulnerable, which I think is an interesting distinction. I remember when I first was getting into gunning, I was like, I have to make a whole different set of armor, and this armor...
Yeah. Yeah, but... Also, because you're attacking from over here, you have more time to see right before you're about to get hit, so...
True. But, like, late game, I don't know if it's so true in Tri-Ultimate, depending on the quest, but, I mean, there are definitely monsters that can one-shot a gunner, and that is,
jeez,
that is a scary prospect.
Yeah.
So, how much are you changing up the mindset for the gunner's guides? Because, again, the sort of... the jump from not being a player to being a player is, it's not much information that you need, but there is, you know, it's things that you basically will not get without having somebody tell you, just because they're so different from what you might expect. Once you're already in it, how are you approaching these guides? Are you going to go into more details? Are you planning on having a lot of tables?
The gunner's guides, it's a combination of, like, raw information. Well, not raw, but, like, information that you would need to understand the different ammo types. But then one thing that I've felt just about every weapon guide lacks online is, like, some simple exercises to reinforce the key strategies behind the weapon. So I tried to incorporate that for both versions. So they each have at least, I think they have about one and a half, depending on the commitment of the reader, exercises, which just basically have you trying out the weapon in a really safe environment so that you can start to understand the controls and some basic applications. And then you work up on your own to bigger and better, which is kind of another Monster Hunter ethos.
Well, there's a lot of diagrams that explain, like, how the ammo works, like different types of shots and stuff, like how they land on the monster. And then we also include, like, depending on the package you get, like, Roy made some videos where, like, you can actually just, like, sit down and watch the difference between this type of setup or that type of setup. What else do we have? We have a combination primer.
Yep.
Which we're actually going to put for free on our site
pretty
soon. But they're just, like, these little PDFs that have a little table that explain, like, here are the items to combo and how to use them. And for what purpose, like, depending on what you're trying to do. So
the breakdowns on the ammo sounds especially useful. I know I'm not the most experienced with gunning, and I've like tried to look up information on it in the past, and there's a lot of things about like the way the ammo works that like are never really explained in the game, like say like piercing ammo, how like the higher levels are only good if you can get it to go through like a really long part of the monster so it procs more hits or whatever. Like that sort of thing is just...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And same with the bow. There's a term in Japan for this, but the way that the bow works is you have to fire from like a critical distance, which is like you can't be too close and you can't be too far in order to do ideal damage. So that's another thing that I cover like heavily in the guide because I really wanted to stress that fact. How to know where you should be in relation to the monster when you're releasing an arrow.
It's very specific. Like, he had me draw this little diagram, and we were just, like, arguing, because I had no idea, like, what he was... Like, I thought he was talking about, like, the top arc of the little red line from the bow. But he was telling me, like, no, it has to be right, like, after, or something. I don't know.
It was... Yeah, we had some...
It was a tough diagram to put together. Like, a lot of heated debates about this red line.
Yeah. Artist and writer conflicts were frequent.
On that note, I was actually looking through the beginner's guide again this morning, just in preparation for this, and I had forgotten how much I liked a lot of the art that you had in there. Like for the section on just talking about, you know, going into a hunt and reading the monster and learning, you know, what its patterns are and everything. You have this picture of like a hunter crouched down behind a rock with just a little sketch pad looking at the Kuropeko doing like his stupid clacking singing dance. It's just the cutest little thing. I loved it.
Everybody like talked about that.
Somehow I knew that's the picture he was going to mention.
And I don't remember what the thought was behind it. But well, actually the point of the picture is like the Peko doesn't even know it's being watched. Like, that's just what it does, like, on its own. So that's the idea I kind of ran with. But, you know, we didn't, like, put it in any promo images, but that's what everyone was putting on this, like, their news site, so...
I didn't realize it was so popular.
Yes. I mean, it was a nice surprise.
Yeah. Did you try to get the same feel out of this guide?
For the Gunner's Guide, since we're targeting more advanced players, like, I wanted to put a little bit more detail into the artwork and make it a little bit more refined. Like the beginner's guide, my inspiration for that was I flipped through a lot of Japanese instructional books, and they usually have like a lot of simple illustrations, like really limited like color palette. And then for this one, I just wanted it to ramp it up a bit and make it, I don't know, just like more visually exciting to look at, I hope, anyway.
It's definitely more detailed. Like, The kind of cartoony aspect isn't there as much.
Right.
Because it's more detailed images and diagrams.
Although there are a couple of, like, comics. Like, we put some comics in there that sort of describe... For example, in the bowgun one, we talk about deviation. So there's this comic that I put together, which is basically a gunner trying to shoot at a little jaggy, and the bullet just completely missing.
Yep.
And the jaggy's just having a good time.
Yeah. Like,
so there's stuff like that in there, too. So I did try to keep a little bit of humor in it. Because I think, I don't know.
Yeah, humor. I mean, what doesn't benefit from humor?
I think some Monster Hunter fans need more humor.
yeah.
In their life.
There is something about games like this that have not necessarily like a super high skill ceiling, but like a super high knowledge ceiling. Like this or Dark Souls that can breed sort of an elitism. And seeing that, like, almost entirely absent from your guides was, like, really refreshing because it was just sort of, like, really simple and honest, like, here's what's in this game. I hope you can learn it and enjoy it.
Yeah, because that's totally what we're trying to go for. Like, we didn't want to talk down to anybody. We didn't want to assume anything. Mm-hmm. We just really wanted to be, like, helpful as possible. We didn't want to put in any like jargon or like, because I would have to read through Roy's drafts to see if I could pick up anything that could be clarified better to make sure that like anybody can pick it up and understand it, and that there isn't a lot of like acronyms or crazy words being thrown about.
But we definitely didn't want to contribute to that kind of elitism that's going on, because there is so much of it, and
Like, and that's another thing that deters newcomers, yeah, right? Like, yeah. the vocal aspects of the community. I'm not saying it's the majority, but there's a vocal minority that makes it, like, intimidating to play.
Mm-hmm.
When you guys were running the social nights on Try, like, that... There's no other time when I would actually play it online unless I was playing with Ryan or our other co-host, Jill, because, like... It's not that I ever like sort of had a bad experience with randoms, but it's just, you know, it's a good game to know that when you go in, you know, people want to be lighthearted and are in to have fun and to talk with each other, and you know, it's this weird thing where you're not looking for the people who are have that elitism, like, okay, we're here, we all know everything, and we should, you know, look down on everybody else. At that point, it's like well, now you're just using the game not because it's fun, but just because you know that you can use it as a point to shit on others. Yeah,
we had a lot of fun for our social nights, and I'm glad that they were able to like create that kind of safe, fun environment for people.
Yeah, I honestly remember playing one time with you guys. I think we were hunting a baggie because you needed it for. Were you building a sword and shield or something?
I thought we did a gold bowl in that one.
I forget. Okay. But I remember just charging around with my Wraithian hammer, like, constantly knocking people over. But everyone still had a good time.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good time.
Like, there's a lot of parts in this game which are just, like, inherently silly. Like, the ways that, like, all the emotes and the way that you get under each other's feet and just everyone goes flying and felines in general.
Cooking steaks.
Yeah, it's like there's only so serious a tone that this game gets. And you know, there's giant dragons and they're gonna eat you, but at the same time, you're gonna go over there and be goofy. It's just gonna happen. Like, you can't get that out of the game.
There's giant dragons and they're going to eat you, and then a bunch of cute cats are gonna come and throw you on the cart.
Yeah, I remember when we first saw Monster. Like, I think we were in Japan studying abroad, mm-hmm. or something, and then Roy kept noticing everybody playing Monster Hunter.
Everybody.
And we didn't know what it was. And so, like, we went into a store and Roy looked at the game and it looked so serious on the cover. Mm-hmm. And then on the back, there were just these cats making food. It was just some sort of cognitive dissonance going there that we just had no idea. And it wasn't until later where Roy really got into it and then had to explain to me, mm-hmm. like, the good aspects of the game. Because from an outsider, it just looks like another, just, like, hack and slash monster, I don't know.
Yeah, it looks kind of, I mean, I like that it has its own kind of culture and stuff, but it does still look a little generic from an outsider point of view.
Mm. But, it was kind of funny because, like, a couple years ago, we went to Universal Studios Japan, and they had, like, a Monster Hunter exhibit.
The real, right?
Hilarious, because it was just, like, a family setting. Like, families were going there. Like, little kids were playing Monster Hunter. It's totally, like, a different mindset than in the West, where I just associate, like, I don't know. I would never think, like, little kids would play Monster Hunter.
Yeah. Huh.
I actually, you know, there's the whole... You know, the thing you always hear, it's like, oh, everybody plays it on the trains there. You get, like, high schoolers playing with salarymen and everything. I had an experience something like that once. I was sitting around in, like, the lobby of a movie theater, and this kid was just, like, bouncing around over my shoulder, like, so excited to see the game. But that was just the one time.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you have any sort of... any experience with the Frontier?
No. My understanding is it's very difficult to get into the game if you're in the West, because I think all the servers are... Yeah.
Well, I know Shepard from Teamwork Cast plays it, right?
He did. I don't know if he still is. I think he... Because it's like a monthly... I think there's a monthly fee, so I think he did cancel his membership. But he told me a little bit about it, and it sounds like it's basically designed for those people that really do focus on... Andy, I'm better than you, and here's a list of reasons why. Like, because it's really grind heavy. Like, you can. Here's an example he gave me. So you know how, like, if you, I don't know if you guys use the lance at all, but you can, like, do three. You can do, like, three pokes, right, with the lance, either up or down. By grinding a considerable amount in Frontier, you could add a fourth poke. So. Things like that, it's like, I do not... that's too deep of a rabbit hole, and it doesn't even sound like fun to me.
Yeah, because at that point, it's not even just like, oh, well, you know, my weapon does, you know, 56 more raw damage. It's not that much of a big deal. It's just like, no, literally my combo is just longer.
Yeah.
That's kind of, eh.
And then it kind of, you know, how we were talking about how it's nice that Monster Hunter does have this level playing field where it is your experience and your skill level is kind of what makes you, you know, better at the game or whatever. But in that game, it can literally be the bigger your time investment, the actual, you can actually end up with a better character. Nobody can argue that you wouldn't have.
Although there are more animals that follow you around.
Yeah, that's the other.
There's like a duck,
There's a duck that apparently can bring you a bento in the middle.
Oh, dude.
A quest.
Right? Sign me
up. And there is like, you can get like a little, like a wyvern pet, right? And you feed it different food and it like levels up and stuff.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
I thought I remember seeing something about that.
It's I believe it, and it sounds awesome.
But from what I also hear, the easiest way to get into that game from the West is either to like fool a Japanese bank into giving you a credit card or buying a Korean social security number from someone.
Wow.
So
well,
I don't know if that's ever going to be something I'll check out.
Yeah, no, that sounds way too fishy for my tastes. And I doubt that we'll be getting, well, I want to say that I doubt it, but I do doubt that we'll be getting the Frontier G for the Vita.
Mm.
Just because, I mean, there hasn't been any interest, really, in bringing the series to the West, so I don't think it's going to be happening.
I actually haven't been keeping up on Monster Hunter 4 very much. I know that it just came out in Japan. Has there been talk about it coming out in the West?
Not officially, no. I mean, there's, you know, there's lots of fans asking, but I think Capcom's really saying nothing at this point.
Because we have seen, like, the ones that we have got have been for, like, home consoles, mostly.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, my theory is that Capcom over here in the West understands, like, long-term what the strategy is for Monster Hunter 4, mm-hmm. and they may be doing what they did with Monster Hunter 3, which is like, okay, we're not bringing this version of the game over, we're going to wait for this version. Because with Monster Hunter 3, Monster Hunter Portable 3rd came out in Japan, and everybody was like, when are we going to get it? When are we going to get it? And then we never got it, but we got the game immediately after that. I'm kind of wondering, if we're not going to get 4, maybe it's because there's the next game in the series is better tailored towards the Western audiences.
Whether that's 4G or whatever it might be.
Yep. But I'm sure we'll be getting in some form.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of interesting changes there that I'd like to get my hands on, the new weapons and everything.
Yeah.
Want to throw bugs at people?
Yeah.
So why not?
Get a big gross bug to be your friend.
I just want to jump on something's back so I can just yeehaw. You're going to hear for miles. Yeehaw.
I want to do, I know with the bow gun actually, when you're like midair, you can reload in the air. That's.
Oh, yeah?
What?
Yeah, I think, well, there's a lot of like midair things you can do now. Like
what?
When you're, I think midair with a lance, you can just start charging, so you'll hit the ground and go right into a charge.
Well, then.
So hopefully we see that sometime soon. Yeah.
I'm sure
like
we will.
A cartwheel hammer ground pound. I want that.
Probably there.
I want that.
I mean, I've seen a lot of like wall climbing and like giant leaping greatsword swings and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, the game's out in Japan. You can probably find like Let's Plays on YouTube and stuff if you're interested.
Yeah. I don't know. It always strikes me better as a game to actually have your hands on because sort of like, you know, people always say like, or like, the other big thing people were saying that makes it hard to get into is just the fact that it looks like, you know, like a hack and slash, and you kind of know what that is if you play The Devil May Cry or something like that. But, you know, everybody always says animation priority, where it's, like, a lot of people can't get into it for that, but I think that what it does is sort of slows down the pace of the game, and it makes it very much about, you know, where's your opening, where's their opening, reading what's going on.
Being more deliberate.
So the game becomes a lot more about observation, and I always felt that whereas like a character action might be about, you know, lots of long combos and, you know, memorization, just sort of, you know, the skill of getting something off, the Monster Hunter is about the skill of like recognizing the dance, about the back and forth, about when do I hit, when do I dodge, when do I block. And because it's slower, and because it's about, you know, it's about doing this, you know, it's about learning what this thing is and then doing it effectively. So it's, I find it's way more fun to play, but maybe not so much to watch, because it's sort of less interesting, because there's nothing big and impressive. The big and impressive thing that happens is that sort of, you know, nothing goes wrong, everything is being successful, everything is, you know, slotting into place.
Well, hopefully we get four over here and we get our hands on it at some point then.
Yeah, gotta... It's, yeah.
So we've covered the guides a fair bit. We've talked about Monster Hunter just sort of generally. Do you have any specific questions for our guests, Nick? I saw you had a clip, a notepad over there.
Yeah. Actually, I was using that as a coaster. But I do have a question. All right. It's real talk time. Why would you use a lance when a gun lance exists?
Oh, yeah. This is a point that I wanted to bring up. And I know that, you know, your My Fair Hunter series was based in Monster Hunter Tri, where gun lances were, sadly non-existent, just sadly absent. But, like, why settle for really the inferior version, the lance without a gun strapped to it?
Well, do you mind if I field this question, sir?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, my favorite thing about the lance is I think it's actually the most reactive weapon in Monster Hunter, in that the better you know your enemy, the better you can dismantle everything that they throw at you. Because, yeah, you can dodge like a lot better than... Well, actually, I guess it's the same dodging with the gun lance, but you do have the benefit of countering.
Yes.
And throwing a counter in whenever the enemy is about to, you know, throw an attack your way... can just get you immediately back into the fray quicker than just about any other weapon. And I think when you're in the zone with the lance, just sidestepping, countering, jabbing, shield bashing, it's a different kind of enjoyment than I get with gun lance. Whereas gun lance is kind of like, well, that's a very different animal, in that it has, like, there's really three different types of gun lances and three different ways you want to use it. But yeah, for me, I just love that lance, for lack of a better word, dance, where you're just like really just working the monster. Kind of like I think in the lance episode, I even compare the lance to me. It's kind of like a boxer, where you're responding to what the monster's doing more so than any other weapon, I think.
Yeah, it's as much as I will get behind a gun lance for being able to fire every bullet at once, I do have to agree that it's sort of a different beast. It does force you to be a bit more technical than to go for heavy hits. And also, Lance Dance is definitely the best member of the Backstreet Boys.
I'm just glad that we got such like an earnest and sincere answer out of just such a nonsense question.
He can go on all day.
Yeah, actually, there is a way that you can almost counter with a gun lance. I saw this strategy. There's this YouTuber name. I think it's, I want to say Badass Overlord or something.
Yeah, I think I've seen that guy's videos.
Yeah, he's really good. And there's a strategy that he uses where if you have either guard plus one or guard plus two and you block a hit, you won't get knocked back at all, so you can immediately follow up with a charged shell or just a regular shell. Mm. And it's not as quick as the lance counter, but it's the best that the gun lance has, probably.
It's the best it can do. Poor gun lance.
Biggest asshole monster, go.
I really don't care for the Durambros.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Like, he's not an asshole by definition, but he's just such a pain in the butt to, like, try to fight.
Yeah, I mean, he has an insane amount of HP, and he does that stupid spin.
The problem with me and that guy is that I see the spin, and I think to myself, I just need to get inside. I just need to get under his reach, and he can't touch me. And it just gets me killed. Yeah.
See, man, I'm standing there with the hammer, and I'm just like, brother! And then, you know... You just feel where he's at.
Any monster that you can mine from is pretty high up on in my book, though.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Mm.
I just can't. It's too big, and it takes way too long.
So conversely, is there like a favorite monster you have, either just like for how much you like it or how much you like to hunt it?
For me, I would say the Baryath, just because, like, you know, he starts out like this ball of anger, and then, you know, you break his wings, and then he gets a little slower, and you break his face, and then by the time he's all broke up, he's usually exhausted, and he just stands there, and he's so weak to fire, so. And there's a million fire weapons.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, is the gun hammer going to be featured in the gun guide?
You know, I think someone else asked us about that, too. And
it might have been me on Twitter.
It might have been.
This is very important to me, you see.
We did not include it, but maybe for version 2.0, we'll
addendum.
Yeah.
Just okay. In the corrections section. Just, we regret that in the previous version of the guide, we did not devote any attention to the gunhammer. The next chapter will cover the gunhammer in entirety. What was I thinking of the other day? A lot of the monsters introduced, featured in Tri-Ultimate, 3G, whatever the proper nomenclature is, I'm not sure, were initially introduced in Portable Third. And I actually played a fair bit of Portable Third and got used to just sort of the romanized names there before they got official translations. How do you feel about the transition of Hapuraboka to Nibelsnarf?
Yeah, you know, at first I was like, what? I was really upset, we'll say. Like, not table flipping upset, but I was like, kind of like, that's not a real name. That's
taken aback a bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that sounds like the name of, like, one of the Smurfs in, like, the Smurf 2 movie. It doesn't sound like a monster that I'm going to be worried is going to eat me. So, originally, I was kind of pissed, but then I think Sarah and I had a day, like, a solid day. I don't even know if it was an episode. All we fought were whatever we wanted.
Nibelsnarf.
Yeah, we fought him over and over, and I was like, you know what? I don't mind anymore.
You don't mind it? Well, I just like it because we can just say, are you up for a quick snarf?
Yep.
Right? Like, to fight. So, like, it translates well, or lends itself well to a nickname.
Yeah. Mm. That's true. We do say that a lot.
That's actually one of my favorite, I think, the Nibble Snarf. I used to hate it.
Yeah.
I thought it was so gross and ugly, but I actually really like it.
I'm not sure how I feel about him, because, like, the bomb gimmick is pretty fun. But otherwise fighting him, like, the amount of time he just spends, like, zipping around under the sand is just so annoying.
True. Yeah, but I do like that you can fish him out a lot. Like, that does kind of help. But when I first fought him, yeah, it was really annoying. Especially because I was always the only one in my group that would use, like, I always wanted to get his uvula. You know, I always wanted to break
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I would usually gun, and he would usually kill me. I don't know why. He would just always kill me.
Well, that gunner armor, you know.
Yep, yep.
In Portable Third, the Metal Gear Solid download quests is just a giant version of him.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I will ever get that.
Yeah, we've tried that a couple times now.
Yeah.
Ah, well.
Yeah, I remember.
That sounds intense.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you don't realize that it's like, okay, it's just bigger, but it's basically the same monster, but he's just so much wider, so it's hard to avoid those charging bites.
Yeah. I mean, at least when you're a gunner, you have a little chance, because he starts all the way over there, and hopefully you've got friends who he will eat first. He's big enough to eat a normal one!
Yeah.
Those are already big enough to eat you! Yeah, those guys are assholes.
So, unrelated question to Monster Hunter, but one that I think we've posed to the past, in the past, to guests. I guess there's kind of a Metal Gear connection. On a giant robot, there are two ways that its knees can face. either bending backwards like a normal human leg, you know, it fully extended, it's straight to the ground, it bends backwards to take a step, or this sort of the chicken stance where the knee, the concave of the knee is forward.
Yep.
Like the, say, the, what were they, the AT-ST walker in Star Wars, bunch of Robotechs, or Battletechs, rather. Which do you prefer? This is an important question, engaging your character.
Okay, do you want to go first, sir? I think...
Well, I can go first.
Okay.
Okay, so I would prefer the chicken legs.
Oh. Yes!
Because
yes!
I like... Bird legs make me laugh. They're just so wacky. And I think that's why I really like... I mean, going back to Monster Hunter, isn't the Plesioth, like, he has those chicken legs?
I think he does.
And he sort of, like, waddles when he runs. It's great.
Yeah,
anyway,
he really does. He does that butt shake after he jumps out of the water.
Yes. So, yeah, for a robot, I think I would really like to see it lie down like a chicken on the ground. So... What about you, Roy?
I was going to say human-style knees because, I mean, chickens... They can't, like, sit in chairs or anything, right?
You don't know
that's
that.
That's kind of a disadvantage.
Wait, does a robot have to sit on a chair?
Well, maybe that could be a way that it charges. Maybe it sits down on, like, this plug that goes
it's got, like, a power throne.
Yeah, power throne. I like that.
I mean, there's an established history of giant robots riding giant robot horses. I don't think you can do that with chicken legs.
That's probably true.
Yeah, that might be tough.
Yeah. You know. I had not considered that.
But then I think nobody has quite yet figured out what a giant robot horse can sit on to then continue stopping.
Turtles, obviously.
Do horses have backwards legs, or are they regular?
They're regular.
Even the back legs? Aren't those ones weird?
Oh, wait, the back legs?
Yeah, no, those are... No.
They
have a whole bunch of joints.
Basically, the way that you consider it is if you look at your foot, like, your heel is sometimes could be mistaken for, like, a reverse knee. But it's really, they just got, like, a real long foot and one big dumb toe.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Sometimes you gotta draw a horse, you learn things like this.
I guess
that
so.
That has been our horse anatomy corner. So, I think things may be going completely off the rails. So, hold on. Nick is pointing at me.
You know, not to sort of straight ask the question about what guide are you going to do next, but what other projects are you currently working on? Are you looking forward to? What's going on? What else have you got going?
Well, I need to ask our manager if it's okay to talk about that. Sarah, is it okay to talk about that?
Should be okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, exclusive coverage here at Liku Studios.
All right. Well, we have a couple things we've been, like, toying around with. One is, like, you know, we do guides, and guides are very labor-intensive. There's a lot of research and a lot of art that goes into it. We've been thinking about starting kind of like, a combination of comic, like, mini-comic guides. So it's, like, an illustrated tip to a popular game, and they would be released serially, like, weekly, we're thinking.
Yeah. For free,
yeah. Because, I mean, right now there's plenty of, like, popular webcomics about video games, and there's plenty of users making their own guides, but we're like, why doesn't somebody do both? So, that's what we're thinking.
Well, I mean, it's going to be an experiment. We'll try it.
Yeah.
Why doesn't someone put the peanut butter in the chocolate, so to speak?
Exactly.
Yeah, because, I mean, for me, I know I'm a visual learner, so I prefer pictures, like...
And humor, right? We're talking about how humor helps. So, Sarah, you're kind of in charge of when do you think we could get that going? Any ideas?
I mean, relatively soon. We would just have to figure out a structure
and
a procedure, basically, like make sure we can fit it into our schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, is a serialized comic of some sort really going to be less work?
That's the thing. That's
I mean, it'll be work, but I think... You know, right now we really only have, we've got that Monster Hunter audience, you know, they're watching us, but I would like to broaden our scope a little bit, get people who are into other games as well.
Yeah, because definitely, I mean, like for Animal Crossing, for instance, like we are really huge into Animal Crossing this year, and there's so many like little tips and stuff that they don't talk about in the game.
Yeah.
And so that would translate... well, to comics, I think, just like a little explanation thingy. And you know, we're not just about Monster Hunter. We play so many other different games. Like, you know, Kingdom Hearts just came out.
Yeah.
We're thinking about getting
that. I want
that,
Wind
but...
Waker. I want Dark Souls 2.
But there's so many tips and tricks that we could, talk about and do stuff with without having to sit down and make a guide for, like, half a year.
Yeah, yeah.
I was actually going to ask that, you know, all of this, you know, we spent the whole episode talking about Monster Hunter. This guy just, you know, they blew up however big. What's the sort of reason that you keep putting so much effort into Monster Hunter? Is it just, like you have things you want to say about the game? Is it because, you know, you have this audience now who come to you for it, and so you want to keep feeding them that kind of thing? Like, what's the how come you haven't quite branched out yet and into maybe something else?
Well, yeah, I guess part of the answer is that I don't know what's wrong with my brain, but it doesn't get tired of Monster Hunter, and it seems to have like an unlimited capacity for junk that I throw in it related to Monster Hunter.
It's a really, really good game.
It is.
It's not a fault.
And you know, I do like the community a lot. I like to, and I think in some way, getting more information out there betters the community. So
oh, definitely.
So it's kind of like giving back. Yeah, I don't know. And I just don't get sick of the game. I like talking about it. We are thinking of our next product probably won't be Monster Hunter related.
Right.
We have a couple ideas in mind. But we might go a little retro, since one of our challenges is having things out that coincide with, you know, popular games. And it's tough for us to do that, in that we don't always get games far enough ahead of the hype so that we can come up with
So that's why we might be tapping into some of our older games that we played.
Yeah.
Well, if Roy, if you want to talk about it.
Well, I was thinking, like, in my youth, I would replay Final Fantasy VII, like, over and over and over and over. I don't even want to know how many times I played it. And I feel like I know all these weird factoids within the game. So I was thinking of coming up with, like, a little book that's just, like, 100 facts or 100 things you didn't know about Final Fantasy VII, or 100 things, like, in the game that you don't know about. Kind of like, almost like a picture book or something, you know?
Mm.
So... Yeah. So a lot of work from Sarah.
Yeah.
So there are comics on the horizon, possibly. There are more books on the horizon. Is there anything you'd like to plug while you're here?
Maybe our respective blogs.
Sure.
I write about video games at kotawari.org. Should I spell that out, or can you guys do like a
link? We can put a link to it in the show notes.
Show notes that we put links.
And then I'm also on Twitter at the same handle. Minus the org, of course.
Sure.
what about your YouTube?
Oh, and then, yeah, I have a YouTube channel, which is kotawari.org, but spelled out entirely in letters, because somebody took Kotawari, those bastards.
And that's where My Fair Hunter airs?
Correct, yes, which is our podcast, where originally it originated because Sarah didn't know anything about Monster Hunter. I knew... like more than any human probably should care to know, and I just trained her up from nothing. So now she's
nothing.
Well, I mean, you had pretty.
I was literally nothing. I didn't even exist before I learned about Monster Hunter.
Ouch.
Okay, so I guess I have a blog that I just started a few months ago. I think it's just like a personal blog where I sort of track the progress of my various projects. I also do comics and web design. I also talk about just, like, I don't know, just anything that sort of interests me. Like, yeah. I have a lot of wide range of interests, including, like marketing, psychology, like, technology, like, life hacking and stuff.
Music.
Did music. You already say music? Oh, yeah, music. I really like music. It's fun. And I don't know, I think that's it.
Well, you also talk a little bit about kind of unique Japanese cultural things.
That's true.
That maybe don't get a lot of coverage in the West.
Yeah, I try to, I mean, just whatever interests me, like, there's a lot of blogs out there about Japanese culture that ties so closely in with, like, gaming and, like, anime and stuff.
Yeah.
And for me, I like to focus on, like, actual, like, what's going on in Japan that people are talking about that's not this small little...
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many people, they think Japan, oh, it's like everyone watches anime, everyone mm-hmm. reads manga. Well, yeah, everyone yeah. does read manga pretty much, but not everybody reads anime. Like, nobody's...
Everybody reads manga, but not everybody reads Naruto.
Right, right.
Yeah, like, not all of Tokyo is Akihabara. Yes. Not all of Japan is Tokyo.
So, it's just, like, stuff like that. I don't know. And, I do comics and stuff, and I still haven't found out, like, the best way to organize all that. I need to create, like, a sub.
That's also on the list domain. Of things to do.
But where can people find that blog?
Oh, yes. It's called forfoxsake.org.
Tremendous.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, we'll throw links to all of that in show notes.
Cool.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're very welcome. Nick, is there anything else you'd like to say, ask our guests, or?
Did anyone ever respond to the question about bird lips?
Sorry? Oh,
somebody didn't? Did somebody?
Somebody said they confidently, I didn't fact check it, but they confidently said that birds do have saliva.
Was that one of our questions, though?
Well,
this was, like, in regards to, like, the Kuropeko drooling, I'm guessing?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And so apparently, because I thought, you know, birds regurgitate, right? So do they need saliva? Doesn't their stomach just do most of the work? They just choke it down? And then
I don't know. But I think it coincided with whether they had lips or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it started. Was
I don't know how that whole situation breaks down. So
yeah. Because if you don't have lips, would you just... I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, I think that just puts a lot of pressure on the Kuropeko, because with no lips, it can't whistle, so it always has to know the words to what it's singing.
Oh, that's true.
That's pretty true.
Well, I mean, it does also have the horn. It has a horn that's a horn?
The thing on its head?
Yeah.
That's a horn.
I thought that was more of like a paddle.
Well, it definitely becomes, like, its head becomes horn-like when it's you know, calling a monster or doing its defense boost dance or whatever. Maybe a bagpipe and a pelican got a little tipsy. And...
Oh, that's why hunting horns aren't in Try. They all got shacked up with Kuropekos? I'm not sure where this is going.
All right. It was fabulous having you two on. This has been an excellent time.
Yeah. Thank you again.
Oh, thank you for having us.
All right. So, we're going to put... links to everything you talked about in the show notes. If people would like to buy any of your guides, where can they go?
Oh, yeah, we should mention that, huh? So, our website is welovecultee.com.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Alright. And for those who you have brought to our podcast... if you go to LiikuStudios.net, you will find the rest of our podcast where we talk about free video games that you can go get. And we also do, like, theory discussion about games and stuff. Sometimes we just talk about bullshit.
Coffee and Mega Man and stuff.
Yep. We've got the comics up there, which hasn't really been updated in a while, but, you know, they're there. and you can always, if there's anything you want to hear us talk about, if there's anything you want to suggest, you can find us... at Liku on Twitter. You can find us, you can send us an email, podcast@LiikuStudios.net. You can find us in the iTunes Music Store. If you would leave a review, that would be super cool.
Facebook, etc.
Yeah, Facebook, that's a thing. That's where your mom is. If your mom wants to listen, you can find us on Facebook. and that's going to do it. So thank you again for being here. And until next time, remember to give credit where credit is 25 cents per play. Yay, it's a podcast.
Yay.
We did it, you guys. We did it.
Nothing was set on fire.